For the Artist Friends Podcast.
Hi, I'm Diane Hunt. I am an impressionist realist painter connecting with nature through my brush. I work in oil paint and watercolor, and I live in the countryside of Maryland's Eastern Shore, not far from the Chesapeake Bay. You can find me online at dianehuntstudio.com. and on Facebook and Instagram at Diane Hunt Studio.
Hi, I'm Constance Brosnan of Steve Brosnan's Jewelry Designs. I live in Oklahoma on a prairie, and I make handmade jewelry in silver, copper, and brass. I'm an artist that paints. I paint pastels and in oils sometimes.
Hello, this is Bob J. Gale. I'm the host of this podcast. I am a emerging representational artist. I do historic renderings, seascapes, landscapes, botanicals, birds, and whatnot, with a tight illustrative hand in watercolor, pen and ink, and acrylic paints. And I live in Oklahoma City. Well, hello, and welcome to the podcast. This is Clyde J. Kale, and you are listening to the Artist Friends Podcast, episode 86, for March the 1st, 2021. And I'm here with Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson, my two best artist friends. And hello, Diane.
Hi, Clyde. Hi, Constance. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Constance.
Hey, Clyde. Hi, Diane. Hello, everybody.
We started the podcast a little bit late because we were having such a wonderful discussion, catching up on what's been going on in the week, talking about family, relatives, and we just happened to enjoy the companionship each week. Then we have to record this for some work.
Don't make it sound so much like drudgery. It's not.
Really not, actually. Yeah, I hope that the information we talk about is useful to our listeners. And the theme for this week was more of a, like our studio practice, or this life as an artist, living an artist's life, you know. And so if you go to www.talkartpodcast.com, that's talkartpodcast.com, you'll see the recommended videos for our discussion. And I put two videos on there from little short one from Steve Houston. And what I like about Steve was he's not only is he showing you helping you improve your skill set in figurative drawing, but he also gives basically a talk of his philosophy, and he has such a positive attitude. Diane, did you watch those two videos? What's your opinion of that?
Yeah, well, he was talking a little bit about how when you're a kid, you have no inhibitions as far as what you're, you know, creating art and being creative in general. And all kids are always creative and, you know, making things and playing and, you know, inventing stuff. And it all kind of gets trained out of us or whatever when we go to school and, you know, as we get older. And well, a lot of people lose it completely. And it's really detrimental to your life and how, you know, you kind of lose that creativity. And creativity is a big part of being a human. Yeah. You know, it's really integral, and it's sad that there's so many people out there that don't think they can make art or be creative, even if it doesn't turn out like they want it to, you know, it's just the whole practice of doing, being creative and playing and, you know, enjoying yourself. A lot of people don't do that.
Absolutely. And that they think that if they're working artists, they think that every piece they're working on has to be a masterpiece. Everything has to be just perfect, just so-so, and you don't take time to play. And that's why I like Steve, his talk as he's drawing there. You know, he's talking about, he says, you just got to learn to play, you know?
Yeah. Not be afraid to put a mark on the piece of paper and, you know, if it doesn't turn out, turn the page, start over again. Or like he did, just keep adding to that page until you got to practice doing it in order to learn how to do it correctly. Or doesn't matter. I guess correctly is not the right word for it, but until you're satisfied with what you're expecting to see on the page.
Well, exercising those brain cells, making that synaptic connection between your hands and your brain. You know, so the brain, in a sense, is just like a muscle. You know, athletes, they spend hours and hours and hours, you know, working their muscles and working their body. And it's just, artists is the same way. So when you're with your sketchbook, you're drawing. I think we talked about that before. Like with Stephen Bauman used a piano analogy, right, Diana? Yeah,
any kind of arts, really. There's, you know, a practice. You have to continue to practice no matter how, you know, masterful you are. You even people that, like, I mean, I've been painting for years and years, and I still practice, and I still, you know, take time to draw and just do the basics and just try to get better all the time. I mean, I don't think anybody that's an artist can ever be satisfied. It's like you're always striving to get, you know, better, and you see somebody else what they do, and you're like, why didn't I think of that? And then you're like, you know, trying to see if you can do that too, and you get all these other ideas, and it's like an endless process.
This is I think I could look at it as growing, you know, as an artist, because you're always growing as an artist.
Yeah,
you may not like what you did in this painting, but then you'll change things in the next one, or try something new in the next one. Or
Steve Houston, in one of the other videos that we had watched, talked about that, stealing from other artists. And I recall in the interview when he first said it, the young man that was looking at him kind of funny, you know, he said, no, he says, not copying, but when you see another artist do something a certain way, it will inspire you and hey, why didn't I, like Diane just said, why didn't I think of that? You know, and you can use it and adapt it for your own purposes.
Right.
Which I think falls in line with his discussion in these two videos about playing. You know, it's just have fun. You know, that we are so blessed and lucky that this is, you know, part of the artist's life, that we have this talent, that we can do this when so many millions of other people can't. Yeah. And that we shouldn't beat ourselves up. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that people can't do it. It's just they don't, and they've been taught, or it's been learned out of them, or something.
Yeah.
Like, you know, throughout their life, and where they had somebody tell them they were horrible, or, you know, put them down about trying it, or, you know, doing anything creative or artistic, and it's kind of gotten, especially in the U.S., I guess, it's really got a negative connotation when you tell people, you know, when you're a kid, that you want to be an artist, and they're like, oh yeah. You know, everybody kind of say, you know, you're not going to make any money doing that, where it's not all about money. It's just a part of your humanity, you know.
Self-expression, you know, being able to express yourself without somebody putting you down for at least playing. I mean, because you're right.
Yeah, it doesn't mean everything you do has to be a masterpiece. I mean, that's not what it's about.
It's kind of like, you know, they have these adult coloring books now. I mean, people are starting to be a lot more creative than they used to be, because things are so much, I'd like to say, easier than they were back in the 1950s or 60s, you know.
Well, science has actually proved that as we get older, it's good to that's why those adult coloring books are, you know, became more popular, because it keeps the keeps your brain, you know, functioning. That when people are doing something creative, especially older adults, it actually helps ward off the possibility of Alzheimer's and other diseases. So and I think I told you guys a story about my mother does those coloring books, and she has always been the person that says she wasn't creative, but she's creative in her own sense. I mean, how did I become an artist? I got it from my mother, a little bit of it. And we were talking one time, and I was describing to her, I don't know how we got in the conversation, but I got onto about the color wheel and complementary colors and mixing colors. And I said, all of a sudden she said, oh, so that's why when I put that green down and then I add a little bit of yellow to it, it looks more like a kind of a yellow green, a color that I don't have a pencil for. I said, you're mixing colors without. Oh, really? Well, when we get done, she was so excited because she was going to try. I described some other color combinations for her to try. And I'm going to try that. Yeah.
You ought to get her a color wheel and mail it to her so she can learn about triads and the different color combinations that she can put in her coloring books.
She was only coloring, the colors that she had a pencil for, And I said, no, you can mix those colors and get different colors. Oh, wow. I mean, but it just thrilled me because here she's 80 years old, and I thought I worry about her, and a lot of times she'll have the TV going, but then she'll sit there. She's got a little tray. She pops up on her, on her easy chair, and she sits back and fills in the coloring books, and she used to do jigsaw puzzles, but her eyes, she said she kept getting headaches, so she quit. So this is the next version. This is coloring, adult coloring books,
I imagine it's a lot less stress on her eyes to look to color than it is to look at all those little tiny pieces of puzzles.
Yeah.
Because some of those puzzles can be very, you have to look at them hard to figure out where they're going to go.
Yeah, but she was the whole time when we were growing up, she was a big jigsaw puzzle fan. Because I was going to send her one, a custom jigsaw puzzle with some artwork in. And she said, no, I don't do those anymore. Don't do it. You'd be wasting your money. it just thrilled me that, she does those adult coloring books, and she just slowly, works on them a little bit at a time, And I was teasing her. I said, now, do you stay within the lines? And that was a reference back when we were growing up. We used to always be yelled at. Yeah, we got to stay within the lines. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's part of that thing that you get your creativity taught out of you when you're young, because when adults help you color and draw, that they want you to make it look exactly like it's supposed to look when you look at it, instead of being more creative about how you want to portray it,
Well, when you talk about creative, my mother also used to do the paint by numbers. And I remember vividly when I was about 8 or 9 years old, she was doing quite a few. So I wanted to do one. So she bought me a set. It didn't go so well because I kept wanting to pick. She got so mad at me, so angry. You're supposed to go by the numbers. Yeah, but that don't look right, Mom. That's when
you were going rogue on her.
That's when she knew I was probably going to be an artist, because I didn't like following the instructions. All right. Next video, which I thought was really interesting and was good, was our friend Raffi. And he talks about, it's never too late to pursue what you love. So what did you guys think about that discussion? Was that motivational? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it. Yeah, go ahead. Your grandma Moses never painted until she was 80, I think, didn't she? Because her hands got where she couldn't quilt anymore, so she started painting.
But I think a lot of artists go through what he was talking about, how you try different things and then you it's not right for you. So you kind of switch to something else for a while and you're like searching, trying to find your outlet, and you try all these different things and you find it's not quite right. So you quit that and you try something else. And I think artists in general people that end up being artists, they are very adaptable. You're not afraid to like stop doing one thing that's not giving you, what you want out of life and switch to something else. We're not as, I don't know how to say that. we're more.
Conformist. We don't conform. We're not like pig.
Yeah, but we're more risky, like we're risk takers. We don't know if something's going to turn out or not. But we'll try it anyway, kind of thing.
Yeah.
We don't have that fear like a lot of people do.
Yeah, that's true.
You work through that and you try different. I mean, I've had a bazillion different jobs and things through the years, but I knew that nothing, it wasn't the right thing. And sometimes I just did jobs because I knew I had to pay bills and I wasn't to the point where I could make enough with my art to do it. So I just sacrificed myself for a while and do whatever I needed to do to get by. But I still constantly came back to, making more art. It's like it never, it doesn't leave you. It's always nagging at you until you, until you get to
the words of Paul Klein was in my ears when one of our sessions that we had with him. And when he says, you're an artist and you can't help it. You're going to be creative regardless if you make money or regardless if you make a career out of it or not. You're going to do it. You can't help it. For some people, curse. Over the years, artists have drank themselves to death or drugs, killed them because they couldn't reach that certain level of satisfaction. But he says, you can't help it. And I think that is so true with many artists. There are people, I've met many people that, especially when I was working, where I was working before, when I was starting out, when I decided I was going to pursue this as try to make a career out of the woodwork. And my brother, he draws a little bit, and they just show me some things. I said, so what is he doing? Well, he's not doing much now. I said, why not? Yeah. And finally, a lot of them started getting tired of him because they didn't want to hear my speech. Yeah. you're going to create, but you've got to, the next step is giving it to the world because I am with what I've been able to achieve. I'm so humbled. I know at times it sounds like I'm bloviating, but I'm just so humbled that I've been given that ability, that gift to share it to the world, and if I can make a living of it, then that's part of the reward, but that's not the central point. The main point is getting it out there and giving it to the world, I had my recent blog post, was a little bit about that. I call it, I've crossed the Rubicon, which is a ancient Roman, without going into details, a phrase. It's I've reached a point of no return, and I'm not going to go over the blog post, but the gist of it was that I've created enough works of art and I've put enough of them out there to where I cannot, if I were to stop today and not ever draw a paint again, I cannot say I'm not an artist, because people are going to say, well, what's that? What are all those things got your name on them? So what, you're not an artist? Are your fingers broke? What's going on? So I've reached that a point of no return. I can't go back. I can't pull it back. No, I didn't. No, I don't want to do that. There's, I well, first of all, my daughters would kill me. They would, yeah, they would force me to draw or to paint something. You know? And it's a shame. I know there's a lot of other people that have that talent and have that creativity. And like we were saying earlier, when they were little, their parents or relatives said, "Well, no, that's you can't make a living at doing that." When people don't understand, it's not so much as that. It's when you're creating art, you're being human. You are directly connecting with the human race, because they have found ancient caves, even back in the cavemen days. They created art. They found it on the walls. Yeah, they draw. Somebody got up there and drew an animal that they killed, you know, or whatever. And
yeah, and that says a lot about the arts. I mean, people, you know, a lot of people don't think that they're all that important, but even people back in caveman days, I mean, besides mm-hmm. having some kind of shelter and food, they created art, which is kind of crazy. It seems like it wouldn't be something that was necessary, but it was. They couldn't survive without doing it. So it had to have been really important.
So. Yeah, they do stories like the stories on the Indians do in the caves where it was like hunting scenes, you know.
Yep. And it gets back to, you know, Ralphie's emphasis is talk of you're never too old, you know, to pursue your dreams. You know, you can just pick up that paintbrush, pick up that pencil, and you know, start making some art. Start, you know, you can do it. And let's see. Then the next video was Stefan Bauman. Now the first part of his talk, what was, you know, his normal spiel, but what got me, what I picked up on and what resonated with me when he started talking about, he says, cause I keep hearing this term a lot, the next level up, the next achievement as an artist, you know, how to reach that next level. Cause I'm getting to that point now. I'm wanting to, it's not so much, I'm not a realist artist, but I'm wanting to get to that point to where, my works, have a certain, uniqueness, you know, about them, that it's not just another flower painting. It's not just another ancient monument. It's not just another pair of shoes. It has something, you know, unique that, you know, make people go, wow. Yeah, that's the level that I'm, and I've done only a few pieces like that. And they were what I like Stefan Bauman calls happy accidents. Yeah. When I go back and I analyze and I look at them, and it was, you know, it was all about, you know, the light and the shadowing that and the color temperature that made it, you know, made it stand out. And his talk, using photographs, and I disagreed with him in one sense. I think what he was focusing on was, to me, artists who create works from photographs, they try and make it like the photograph, which in the essence the piece becomes boring. You know, they try to render it like, you know, what they're seeing, but not what they really seeing. They don't put themselves, into it. And you put yourself into it, your self-expression comes out with the manipulation of the light and the shadows and the colors and everything. Diane, did you pick up on that, what he was talking on that? Or?
Well, I think part of that is that he is trained as a plein air artist. And when you, and I learned the same way, we never painted from photographs. I never used photographs until last maybe 3 or 4 years, maybe. I always painted from life. And when you paint from life, there's so much more than just the objects that you see. that you get into your painting. It's like, and you can change things around. You have a lot more ability to move things and do things to improve your composition and the coloring of the what you're seeing. And you can just change it up a lot more when you're seeing it from life and working from life than you can from a photograph. Photographs are very limiting, and people that haven't gotten out and painted from real objects and real life. Yeah, I mean, you can paint in your studio, but you know, you're painting from like doing a still life. If you're actually seeing that glass or whatever in front of you, you can see a whole lot more color and be a lot more a part of it and attached to it. You can get that under your canvas so much more than you can from a photograph.
Yeah.
But once you've done that in real life and to the point where you really know your subjects and can do that, then you can work from photographs because you have more than just the photograph to draw on. So, mm-hmm. You get a lot more stuff in, a lot more feeling and things into your paintings.
And that's the point that
makes any sense.
I kind of disagree. I use photographs for reference of objects, and my compositions most of the time is from my imagination, and I just use the photographs for the placement, and I do try to spend time looking at I don't know if it was Stephen Baumer or maybe it was Steve Houston or whatever artist who said that when you're sitting in your living room and you see the shadow falls on objects, either sketch it out or at least study it. And I spend a lot of time, but my mind just drifts. I will sometimes spend hours. I'll just be smoking my pipe and looking at how the light is falling on this from the ceiling.
But you're looking at real light. You're not looking at a photograph of it.
Yeah.
So you're seeing all the color change and the.
You're experiencing it, but more
experiencing it.
Mm-hmm. And that those little exercises have actually helped me. And mm-hmm. When I'm creating a composition and I'm looking at different reference photos for the objects of the composition, those has helped me in portraying the light and the shadow. So. Yes, you give a very good point. Like you were saying, Diane, it does, when you're looking at from life, it does help you and improve, improve your works. But I still, I don't want to completely, put down the photograph, because this is where I have the illustrator, because I have the illustrator background. Illustrators have files and files. They used to have, like we watched a video about Roy Lichtenstein, when he had files of clippings, magazine clippings, for reference material for ideas. Well, now with the digital, I have tons and tons. I'm always collecting photographs of things that'd be all right for a future.
Yeah, well, you can do that as far as your ideas, but if you're really trying to see the colors that are there, you can't see them in photographs, no matter how good the photograph is.
That won't give you the amount of colors.
Yeah, your eyes give you a lot more information.
Yeah, when you're out doing a landscape painting, you can take a picture of what you're painting, which is something I do, but then don't use the picture to paint from while you're out there. You use the live. Because you see so much more color than is expressed in a photograph, because, there's only so many levels of color that the printer or whatever is going to use. Whereas your eye can see a whole lot more information than that. And then you can look if you're painting, like Stephen said, if you're painting throughout the morning, you get to watch the way the shadow moves across the land with what you're painting. And then if you want to leave something out or add something in later, you can, because you have that information stored in your brain, and you know how the shadow looks going across there. It's just different.
It's like what it led to when he mentioned, you know, some people, you know, they say, well, I want to make a bigger, you know, a bigger piece. And he says, well, you may start out in plein air with a small piece, but he said, don't complete it. Stop at a certain point. Yeah. His whole emphasis.
And I agree with him on that one. I'm like him. I get bored. I wouldn't want to keep doing the same painting over and over in different sizes. That seems pointless.
Yeah,
to me.
It does. Yeah. It's like, I already did that. Why do I want to do it again? But a lot of artists do that. They'll make.
Yeah.
Well, and then another thing is you can make like little pastel studies of things out in the field and then bring them back and do paintings from them. I mean, you can. It's just up to what you like to do.
His emphasis, which I picked up right away, is that in the creation process, you are resolving issues, you're resolving problems, and these little surprises pop up that makes the piece, you know, stand out, and it makes the piece unique to your expression. It says, and when you do this enough, if you start out, you're just, you know, until you reach a certain level. And that's when he talks about achieving the next level. At a certain point, you're just rendering, basically. And it goes back to his preaching of each work of art is practice for the next one. You know, so you're, and that is how you achieve the level. Steve Houston basically said it in a different way, but saying the same thing with his talk about playing. You know, you're exercising those brain cells. You're making that connection between your brain and your hands and your eyes, and opening up those neural pathways to where after a while they just become kind of automatic, you know, and do it without really thinking much about it, you know. But
it's like if you go play tennis for the first time, are you good at it? No, not very many people are. I mean, or anything that you do. I mean, when you watch a child learn how to walk,
I'm an expert.
Just get up and walk the first time. How many times does he fall on his bottom?
Everything I mean,
that's the same. You have to do the same thing when you're learning to do anything, you know?
Everything I try for the first time, I'm an expert. Well, I think I got a recorded evidence of that. Our podcast. So we look back when we started this thing.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we weren't so free talking, were we?
No.
I had a heck of a time to get you two to say anything, yeah? So I think
we were a little rough at first.
Yeah, we were. A lot of editing.
Okay, the last video and talk, and I just briefly mentioned this, the artist. Like I say, yeah, The Artist's Way, which is, you know, a book that a lot of people rave about. And this was a nice little condensed introduction to it, you know, and that actually kind of boring. But I mentioned it because there are so many artists that use that book. I have a copy of the book. I have the audio book version of it. But I'll be honest with you. It's not for me. I started the book up, and I got excited because so many, you know, we were in our class with Paul Klein, all theirs talk, they all raved about it. So I got it.
The Artist's Way?
Yeah.
My sister had that book, and I read some parts of it, and then other parts I thought, oh, man, I think that's a freaking waste of time. Yeah, I haven't got time to be that wordy in the morning and write 3 pages of thoughts that go on in my brain. They fly too fast, you know.
And I don't want to put it down because it is actually, it's a very useful tool for getting those creative juices flowing for some artists.
Yeah, it is. I mean, not everything is for everybody. And that's the way you have to look at things like that. Some things are for you and some things aren't. Your brain doesn't work that way, or it does, you know, so.
It falls right in line with, remember we got all excited about the Sergio Gomez when he was doing his free workshop for artists at the beginning of the year, you know, and he had all these different steps and he had like what, 5 videos. And I think Diane and I both only got to like 2, I think.
Something like that.
I didn't get to any because you know, I have a little problem, but that's okay.
Before we agree on help, that's just too much work. I think that's this artist way.
I don't know if it's too much work. It's just different. Like, we don't, you work in different ways. And I think some people benefit from how, certain things are done and other people don't. So it's just, you know, you got to take things with a grain of salt. Use what you can and throw the rest of it out.
A way of saying that the artist's life, the artist's way is what you want it to be. If you are having problems deciding, okay, these are useful tools. These are tools, to help you get, started. But if you pretty much know what you want to do, then it becomes the next thing. Take action. Do it.
Yeah, it's in the doing that you learn.
Yeah. I like one of Stephen Bauman's talks. He said he sees so many artists, they go from workshop to workshop to workshop to workshop. But they get complained because they're not improving. They're not taking action. They're not concentrating on, one workshop is probably all they ever needed, to really get them started, motivated, And that's the whole point. You've got to pick those paintbrushes up. Or pick that pencil up. Yeah. So with that, I think we will end. This is one of our longer ones. I was surprised. I didn't know if we would be able to get through this, but we managed to rumble along. And I'm sorry. I hope our listeners don't think we're too preachy, but I can only speak for myself. I can't speak for Diane and Constance, but this artist life is just so invigorating and so enjoyable that I want everybody to be an artist. I want other people to really understand and jump into it. And it doesn't have to necessarily be visual art, it could be writing, it could be music,
cooking. Some people like to cook.
Cooking, yeah.
Some people like, woodworking. That's an art.
But
there's all kinds of art forms.
Crafts.
Sculpture.
Because it is such a key component, and especially with all the we were talking before we started recording, all the negativity with the COVID and the politics, and everywhere you turn, it's like, oh, my God.
You need that creative outlet.
It's hard to keep from getting depressed. Well, if you start making art and start doing something creative, I guarantee you that will wipe away your depression. Unless you get angry because it doesn't come out right. Well, then you got to think about Steve Houston talk.
Just flip the page and start over again.
Just play. Have fun. So this is Clyde J. Kale, and you have been listening to the Artist Friends podcast, episode 86. I'll let Diane say some last words on that. She was going to say something. I cut her off. So,
I just think it's important that everybody has some kind of creative outlet, and whether it's like to be as a career or just something for fun, but just to be creative and enjoy it. It's all part of your human experience and making life happier and better.
Mm-hmm.
Constance, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I believe in creativity. I mean, I would go through bouts of not painting or drawing for a while, but I always had things like making quilts or sewing clothes for myself or crocheting and knitting. I mean, it's all a challenge, and that's what keeps your mind fresh, is being challenging yourself to learn new things. And then that way, you just... it makes you happy, I guess.
That's what it's about. There's more to life than going to work and getting a paycheck and feeding the kids
Well, that's important because you have to raise good children.
Well,
that's important.
What I'm saying is just, the everyday life, there's more to it. Some creativity to it. You add some artistic function.
There's some artists that I can't remember who that quote's from, where they say art helps create shake off the daily dust or something to that effect. I forget exactly how it's worded, but that's really what it does.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Sure does. All right. Let's wrap this up. And I'm going to say bye-bye to Diane and Constance. Let Diane say bye to everybody.
Good night, Clyde. Good night, Constance. Good night, everyone.
Good night, Clyde. Good night, Diane. Good night, everybody. Thanks for listening.
I second that. Thank you, folks, so much for listening. And as always, give us some love. Give us a star rating, some thumbs up, however you hear these podcasts. Thank you so much. Until next time.
The Artist Friends Podcast is produced and edited by Clyde J. Kale. Participating artists, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson, and Clyde J. Kale. You can find more information about Diane Hunt at www.dianehuntstudio.com. Constance Bronson at www.etsy.com/shop/CBROSNANS. Clyde J. Kale at www.cjkaleartworks.com. If you would like to participate or appear as a guest on the Artist Friends Podcast, please email cjkale@mystery-otr.com. If you enjoy these podcasts, please give us a thumbs up or a star rating. And most of all, send us your comments. This podcast is issued under the Creative Commons license.